Hello, I'm Bill DeYoung. This is the Arts Alive podcast for the St. Pete Catalyst. Sheila Calley is here with us today. She's an audio engineer and a playwright and so much more. A very important creator in the St. Petersburg universe. Hello, Sheila.
Hello, Bill. Thank you for inviting me.
You were saying before that you're not used to being on the other side of the microphone here.
No, I'm a longtime audio producer, so I'm usually the one doing the recording and the editing.
Usually the one saying what I'm about to say to you is I need you to get a little closer to the mic.
Speak up, yeah.
Among the many things, I don't know exactly where to start, but Sheila is responsible for the audio tours that one hears, say, at the Dolly Museum, the Arts Alliance's mural tours. There are many others which I'm not thinking of, but you've basically audio mapped the arts in this city.
We've done our best for a number of years. The Dolly is doing their audio tours in house now, but we did them for many years. We did them for the James Museum in English and in Spanish. Which is very cool.
Oh, at the James. Oh, yeah.
We've got a bilingual tour of the permanent collection.
That's fantastic.
For Selby Gardens, and we did the visually descriptive audio tours of the Shine murals for a number of years, aimed at visually impaired viewers, giving them an experience of the murals.
It must be nice that to know that whoever the organization is, that they'll come to you eventually and say, can you do this for us? And to know that you can. Do it.
We've been very fortunate. We did actually got the first audio public art commission from the city of Tampa that we released a few months ago.
And what was that?
Ybor Speaks. We did. We were awarded that with Paul Wilborn, and it's an audio celebration of diversity and immigration in Ybor City's history through fictional vignettes that I wrote and soundscapes that Matt created and talks that Paul gave and audiobook selections that I researched and recorded.
So how interesting.
It's available online.
You know, Paul, of course, wrote Cigar City, you know, the short stories about Ybor. But you and Paul and Matt, Callie, your husband, and Paul and Eugene, we live in St. Petersburg.
We live in St. Petersburg.
How interesting that they're calling from across the bay.
Well, they knew Paul.
Well, everybody knows Paul.
And there are not that many, you know, audio sound people around.
So. How long have you been doing this?
About 35 years.
You were in radio early in your career, right?
And in radio for about 25 years. Yeah.
Is it the kind of thing where I want to pursue audio, and I have to make my own opportunities, or did you see the market starting to open up?
I did learn audio production there, and I started the radio theater series that then moved to the Studio 620 that's been going on there for 17 years?
Well, what I mean, the tours and that sort of thing.
Tours.
This interactive sort of audio experience, you know. I mean, could you have, 30 years ago, no one could have imagined you would have been doing
Probably not. 30 years ago, you know, Matt was talking about podcasts and nobody believed him that would ever catch on. So, but look at us here today.
Yeah, here we are. it took me a while to catch on. Now, you work for Creative Pinellas, which is something that I really want to get into, but you also, I guess the Arts In podcast is not happening anymore.
It's happening sporadically.
Sporadically.
We kind of took a powder during the pandemic, and it's getting going again.
Didn't a lot of us, yeah. I think I did one. I think I might have been on one of those, but I can't really remember. I remember being at your house for something. It might have been with Kathy Loper. Is that what
probably,
it was?
Probably,
okay. So what was the idea there? Were you with Creative Pinellas at that point, or did they kind of come to you and say, we want to do a podcast, we want to get artists talking?
Barbara St. Clair started that series before I was hired as the managing editor of the Arts Coast magazine,
yeah,
as I am now, and we did the podcast for a few years before that. And the ideas, evergreen conversations, because, you know, there's some great podcasts about what you're doing on Tuesday, what you're doing this week. But this was meant to be like a long-lasting look at you as an artist and your work, your body of work and your way of working. And so there's some beautiful kind of timeless conversations in that series, about 85 of them. It's been a lot.
Wow.
That are sort of a labor of love with the editing, but they've, in a lot of ways, turned into an audio history of the arts in this area.
Yes.
Because we have the voices of wonderful artists who've passed away, you know, Tom Kramer, Herb Snitzer, Jim Ralston, you know, had wonderful conversations.
We just lost show. Mark Knoll. I would have loved to have heard him tell his story. It would have been great. You know, so let's say what is the process like? I mean, do you go to a studio while they're working and they're just saying, you know, I did some work with Charlie Parker, the great Potter, before he retired. Hey, Charlie.
Nice.
And I loved going there with the video camera and watching him work the pots. And he was so good at it. And I suppose he still is. He would talk to you and say, here's one. I mean, was it that kind of thing where you'd go to the studio?
That would have been great because that would have been great sound. It was just people would come to our little home studio, which is in a room in our house full of kids' books, and just have a conversation with Barbara St. Clair.
So what's the, you know, you were great to come in here and say, yeah, I recognize this. And, you know, before Sheila got here, I was pushing buttons like crazy trying to get everything to work. You know, I'm not an audio engineer, big surprise. But it must be quite a challenge. I mean, it's more than just editing out the ums and erms and false starts.
Well, you know, it's similar to what I do on the magazine, too. It's just making the writer or the speaker as clear as you can be about your art. You know, here's your words as you said them, but as clear as possible, you know, with the message that you're delivering. So,
anybody ever call you and say, no, it's not what I said. You edited me funny.
No.
I was actually talking about, you know, Democrats or something. You know, this is.
People usually, it's often been the best explanation of their work that they've had recorded.
Oh, isn't that nice? And that's because Barbara knows what she's talking about.
She's a wonderful conversationalist.
Yeah, she is.
She's so interested in what you're doing.
She is. I want to get her in here before she steps down this year.
She'd be great.
Yeah. So the podcast, and eventually it became the Arts Coast magazine. Is it a physical magazine like a thing, or is it just online?
It's an online magazine, which is beautiful because, you know, if there's typos, you can just fix them.
Oh, don't I know it? There is no print catalyst, you understand.
Yeah.
Where did the idea for that come about, for Arts Coast magazine?
It was Barbara's idea.
It was an expansion of the, big surprise, it was Barbara's idea. Yeah. Was it an expansion of what you were doing on the podcast?
In a way, probably. But, you know, there's so many arts journalism resources that have dwindled as newspapers have cut their coverage. And so just to be able to have more solid arts journalism is a beautiful thing. And I'm very fortunate that a lot of wonderful professionals who used to work for other organizations,
they're out of work now.
They're writing for our magazine, which is wonderful. Fantastic.
Yeah, I see a lot of names in there that I recognize, and believe me,
it's a great gift.
Every day I wake up and I'm grateful that, you know, I've been doing this 40 years now, but I still have a job, and I understand what that's like. But it's not it's a different voice every time, though. It's not everyone's talking to Barbara. It's you have to edit Joe Schmo and Eric Snyder and whoever else is writing. Eric's an old friend of mine. That's why I dropped his name. Hi, Eric.
Well, the nice thing is that it actually came out of the pandemic. A good thing about the magazine that makes it different is that there's a big focus on artists telling their own stories. And that happened because when I started, I thought, okay, you know, Tony Wong Palms works at the USF Contemporary Art Museum. I can't ask him to write about their exhibit because he works there.
Right.
And then during the pandemic, I realized Tony's the only guy I can ask because he's the only one who can get in the building. And he did one of those first stories like that when the museum was shut and they had just opened a beautiful exhibit and no one had seen it because it was locked down. And so Tony went in and he took pictures and he wrote this amazing story documenting what had happened.
That's not what they're all like, though.
Not all of them, but a lot of them, you know, maybe half of them. You know, if you're an artist and you've got something going on, I'll often ask you first to tell your own story. Mm-hmm. I'd rather pay you and let you tell it directly than ask a writer to talk to you and you don't have to edit it and interpret what you're saying. Just say it yourself.
Well, isn't there a certain degree, though, of interpreting what they're saying there, too? Because sometimes,
of course,
you know, I've seen so many artists' mission statements where it's like, okay, I'm going to Mars now. Okay. You know, or you don't really understand what they mean. And since you're this is being written for, quote-unquote, general audience.
Well, you know, I always put a lot of links into things.
Yeah.
Because if I never take it for granted – because I don't always understand every art terminology. And if there's always, you can't take it for granted that everybody knows exactly what you're talking about. So here's how you can find out. So it's a beautiful way to find out someone's process.
That's another great advantage to being online.
Indeed.
You know, fixing that terrible typo in the cut line or sort of saying, you want to learn more? Go here.
Exactly.
And here, or you can insert a video of, again, Charlie Parker working the pot. You know, here's what it looks like.
Yeah.
You know, why do you do what you do? I mean, starting with audio, I mean, why get involved with all of this? You're a playwright. You're a deeply creative person. You have a degree in history. She rolled her eyes, folks. You know, I wish I had a degree in history. I write a lot about history, but, you know, you probably know more than I do. Why do you do what you do? Is there a lot of money in it?
There's no money in it. as a lot of artists will tell you, everybody has a day job. I think every playwright, Tony Kushner had a day job. Yeah. I mean, there are any playwrights that don't have day jobs. And I'm very fortunate to have started working with actors on audio productions.
Mm-hmm.
And actors are fantastic. And so I would much rather, instead of just writing something on my own that just stays on a page, I'd much rather work with actors and dancers and musicians and visual artists and make something collaborative that we can all make together that none of us could make alone, that I certainly couldn't make by myself. It's much better to do it as a group.
Is that the thrill of it, to sort of say, people who you know, write and produce their own stuff, for lack of a better explanation. You know, I've made something out of nothing. And here we've all done it together.
Yeah.
That's a thrill, isn't it?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. And it's always better than I always think it will be good. And it always is better than I imagined because of all the other people who are involved in it. So I lead what I call the Sparks Collaborative Ensemble. And we work together. It starts with a script of mine. I'll come up with some words, an idea. And once you give that idea to actors, to dancers, to musicians, to visual artists, they all are going to interpret it differently and add their own art form to it. Uh-huh. And so it becomes something where, you know, you have a great idea, somebody else has a great idea. It all builds and just becomes better and better and better because of all the people who are taking part in it.
Now, does Sparks go out and do productions? I mean, talk to me about this.
We've been doing a lot of live performances. It started some years ago with a live collaborative kind of chain reaction day at the Studio 620, as everything starts at the Studio 620. And then Helen Hansen French and I were commissioned to create a dance theater series that I interpreted as a dance science series for the GASP Festival in 2018 from David Warner.
I remember that.
Which was amazing. It was Air, Earth, Fire, Water with the Parachutes.
Yeah.
And Eugenie Bondurant. And it was just one of the best things ever. And so we just kept thinking about things like that. And so I was working with Paula Kramer, was one of the choreographers. And every time we would do, I think we've done, 15, 16 projects together in the last few years. And every time we'd finish one, Paula would call me the next day and say, what's next?
When are we starting the next one?
I would have to think of something else. So, you know, and we just kept going during the pandemic online. So if you say you're not an audio producer and I'm looking at you with an audio mixing board and microphones, you know, I'm not really a video producer, but I've had to learn video because it's modern times. And so we started very early in the pandemic doing kids stuff because it was just terrifying, you remember, in the very early weeks. And so I started writing bedtime plays for kids and we would just perform them. Everybody was at home. We'd perform them live on the conference call line. And so kids would call in with their families. They'd call in on the conference call line live at 7:30 at night.
Wow.
And the actors would call in and it would be a live performance on the phone. And we through the Studio 620, thank God. And we did that for a month. And then I took one of the recordings of those and gave it to Creative Clay because I'd been working with Creative Clay and we'd been doing collaborative, fantastic performances where you give them a script, an actor reads it, they create visual art, and they're wonderful visual artists at Creative Clay, and they've become performing artists through all of our collaborations. And so I gave them the recording of one of those little kids' plays, the Splish Splash, which David Warner and Jan Neuberger recorded. And they listened to the audio recording and met over Zoom because, you know, their member artists are used to coming and working at Creative Clay
right.
many times a week, and they were all suddenly stuck at home. So they would meet over Zoom and work on this project together, and they created the illustrations. And so there's a video that I put together with the audio recording. I got a clean audio recording later that wasn't on the phone and matched it to their illustrations, which they had very carefully created over many months of collaborating. And it was beautiful.
That
and so we
beautiful.
Just kept going.
You sent me a video this week called Rainbow.
The Rainbow Book.
Yeah, the Rainbow Book. And it was, I see some of the people that you've talked about here today are in here. Tell the audience what that is and what you were trying to do there. You can describe it better than I can. I thought it was very sweet.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you. Well, I had done several things for kids, these free illustrated audiobooks. They're basically videos, but it's fundamentally an audio theater production with illustrations created by visual artists, and Creative Clay had illustrated several of those, and we turned it into a live performance. And then when I heard, I'd avoid the news actively because it just upsets me.
Mm-hmm.
But when I heard about the whole rainbow thing, I thought, well, I know what the next one is. And so the Rainbow Book is visual and literary and performing artists creating work inspired by rainbows. And the word rainbow just recorded in many, many people's different voices.
It's
about 6 minutes long.
I love the different interpretations, too. It can be this, it can be bow, you know.
And that was my one idea that I had. I said, it'll be rain, like actual rain, which, believe me, was difficult in the drought to find some rain on our porch. And then bow, like bow ties. So David Warner and Larry Biddle are tying each other's bow ties.
Yes.
And then it was rain, so it's Paula Kramer, a dancer dancing her interpretation of rain.
Mm-hmm.
And then bow, like he's my bow, which is Bob Devin Jones and Jim Howell.
Yeah.
And then after that, I said, it's just rainbow, whatever you want that's inspired by rainbows. And so many wonderful artists were just happy to take part in that.
So where will this go, the Rainbow Book?
It's up online. It's free. Anybody can use it and share it.
Do you have the address you can share with us?
It's on my website, sdcowley.com. There's a collaborations page. There's a kids page. It's on our Vimeo channel. There's a Sparks Vimeo channel. And, anyone can use it. Play it as many times as you want.
Well, going back to something, you know, that I rather pithily said earlier, you know, is there any money in this? Is there any way to monetize what you're doing? And do you not care?
Well, I hope someday. I mean, I love kids' books.
Yeah.
And I started writing kids' books, but it's hard to get a book published. You know how. I don't know how to do that. But I am an audio producer, so it's easy for me to make theatrical, you know, audio versions of kids' books, which these are, with fantastic illustrations. So many amazing visual artists. I didn't know what anybody was going to do. You know, their dancers involved, their visual artists. Helen with the parachute, the parachute.
Like Larry and David, you didn't say do the bow ties.
No, that was their idea. I said the bow ties, but tying each other's bow ties was their own idea.
Yeah, nice moments. It's a very nice little thing. Yeah.
Jay Hoff and John Hulls in front of Jay's mural. I didn't know what they were going to do. And that became, you know, the grand finale of the thing because it was just so beautiful. Helen and the parachute with her family, her kids. None of us knew what was going to happen when I went out and met them in the park to film the parachute. And then it just happened.
I think
her little
boy
came up with the title as he got tangled in the parachute.
I remember that. I think you just answered the question, though, why you do what you do. I mean, you kept saying it's just beautiful.
It's joyous. It's joyous work. Yeah.
You know, in at the end of the day, we all have to eat, but this is why we're here.
Right.
Is celebrating art in its myriad forms.
Yeah. And I hope that, you know, someday with grants and sponsors that, you know, we can be able to pay artists because at the moment, I've basically just been convincing all kinds of people to work for free.
Well, it's because they like you so much.
You're very kind.
So,
it's fun to work together.
Oh, it was great, as I said, to see so many people that I knew in that clip. It's like, oh, yeah, and there's John,
I just yesterday published Walter Barks at Buses, which is illustrated by Catherine Wood's beautiful Sunrunner Stop illustrations.
Oh.
And David, I wrote it, David suggested it during the tiny telephone plays for
Walter
their dog,
Walter. I've met Walter.
Walter used to bark at buses. So it's it's about a dog who barks at buses until he gets to ride one. And so David and Kate Young did a beautiful performance that Jim Rayfield directed, and it just got released yesterday.
Before we go, I want to, I should get on the mic here, right? Before we go, I wanted to ask you about your plays and sort of where we are. I know you're in the new play exchange. I stuck Mayday, the play I wrote up there, but so far nobody's called to produce it, but one day.
You never know.
So where are we in the scheme of things? I can't remember the last one you produced, but I know it hasn't been that long.
I think Flying was the last one that was...
It was Flying.
Had a full production here.
I thought there was something after Flying.
There were several after Flying. It was the last one that was produced here.
Here.
In town. Okay. It had a couple of productions during Zoom in Colorado at an immersive production in an airplane hangar. And the burlesque astronomy play got found on the New Play Exchange and is going to have a staged reading in a planetarium at a college in California.
Did you say the burlesque astronomy play?
It's a celebration of art and science.
Well, okay.
I like the title.
They're
having a STEAM collaboration between the theater department and the astronomy department in this university in California, and they're going to do a staged reading in the planetarium.
Okay.
Which is fantastic.
What are you working on?
I keep woodshedding, you know. You just keep putting stuff out there.
Fair enough.
But the kids series is current and dear to my heart.
That's beautiful.
So, there's got about it.
It's scowley.com?
SD Cowley.
SD
Cowley.
Yeah.
SD Cowley, all one word.
And once you mentioned Walter the dog, man, I was all in. Yeah. I was all in. Sheila Cowley, always a pleasure to talk to you.
It's very kind. Pleasure to talk to you.
And we'll see you on the Creative Panelist website and with the Arts Coast Magazine, et cetera, et cetera. And I did want to make, you said that you were one of the co-founders of Radio Theater Project.
Well, early, I brought the equipment early in the day.
Oh, okay. Thank you. Sheila, thanks so much for being with us this week.
Bill, thank you for asking.